This is the Open Air Project.
If you want to do something, get out and do it.
And do it now. Do it while you can.
Life is just too short.
Okay, so there's been some talk in social media and everywhere else on the forums and everything else about one of the guys. We're not going to call him out by name, but I think you guys can figure it out. But there's been a guy out there that got caught poaching, and he's got a television show. And
this isn't the first time this has happened either. This is the second one, and
right. And this happens
within the year, anyway.
More than you know, it happens a lot, but the. There's a lot of rumors of poaching, but this guy's caught on camera, like, yeah. Doing bad stuff.
Yeah. Well, even if it doesn't come down to where he actually, you know, if something comes up, I'm not going to say anything to this until it's been 100% proven, because it's all just, to me, it's speculation right now.
I agree, but it's worth talking about.
But even if the video that we're talking about, even if he doesn't get caught poaching or he's found not guilty of that,
mm-hmm.
The fact that in the video there was an unethical shot made on a deer, which sometimes happens by accident, this was on purpose. Just yeah. That fact to me is... I don't know, enough to call a guilty verdict on an unethical kill anyway. You just don't do stuff like that.
I agree. It's not, you can tell from the video, it was not on accident. It wasn't like, you know, like I made a mistake in Ohio by not checking that deer before we quartered it up and took it out of the woods.
Yeah, that's different.
No, that's what I'm getting at. There are... mistakes, and as if you hunt long enough, I think eventually you're gonna make a mistake.
Oh yeah, bad shots and stuff, and bad shot placements happen.
Well, no, I'm even talking about.
But he flat out shot an unethical shot.
Well, yeah,
he hit the deer right in the ass when it was looking away from him. That's the shot this guy took.
But that wasn't even the reason he's in trouble. He was in trouble because he shot a deer right before that, and then he was like, oh, I'm going to shoot this one because it's bigger.
Yeah, well, yeah, like I said, I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's the whole thing, if it happens to play out like it's probably going to play out, is completely moronic for somebody in his position.
Right, because he doesn't need to do that. He can hunt wherever he wants.
And... it also puts a bad name on the hunting community. It doesn't affect just him and his crew. It affects everybody that picks up a bow or a gun and goes out and hunts. He's supposed to be the... Well, he's putting himself out there to be a guy that everybody looks up to, right?
I mean, that's... Yeah, I think that's what he's trying to do. So, speaking of controversial things...
Why are we going here tonight?
Because I want to talk about it. It's in the news, and I want to talk about it. Did you see the uproar about the guy shooting the snow leopard?
No, I've missed that somehow.
So, apparently this guy shot a snow leopard, and everybody... There has been by the non-hunting community, there has been petitions sent around to get this guy in trouble. I'm a little on the fence. I mean... why would he be able to shoot a snow leopard to begin with?
I don't know. I don't know the story behind it. But I don't know the laws. But even going back to the previous story we were talking about, all that does is open up...
bad press for us.
And it just gives the anti-hunters something to to stake claim for themselves on, you know? But the snow... I haven't seen anything on that. Somehow I've missed that.
So it's been a full week of non-hunting... are you jonesing at all?
Yeah, after hitting it so hard, especially when we were down in Ohio, when we got back, I was like, I didn't know what to do with myself.
That's what I was thinking too, and I was a little bit disappointed, to be honest with you, because I, you know, last year we hunted really hard for a long time, and I felt like I didn't have anything left in the tank at the end of the year. This year, I felt good. We got back. I was ready to hunt some more.
It went by so fast.
Yeah.
For some reason this year, but.
Well, tonight we got Matt Barger in here.
Matt's sitting here beside us.
He's
Matt's my cousin. We've mentioned him on here quite a few different times.
Yeah, he's along for the ride. Tonight we're gonna talk about a few things that he can definitely lay
an opinion out there on. Sitting in with us tonight. Say hi to everybody, Matt.
Hi, everybody.
So, your bow season was, you didn't make a kill. But I won't call it unsuccessful, though, right? Because
my boy got one.
Yeah, that's why.
And that's, man, that's cool. I mean, when I saw that, you sent me that, I was like, that's really what it's all about.
I mean, he is 5 for 5 on buck.
Yeah, and how old is he, CJ?
13.
13.
So he's got 5 bucks
in five years. 5 in a row, right? He hasn't missed a year yet either.
No, he got the spike with you last year.
Yeah, and 2 years ago was that he when shot he nice shot eight. That big 8 point?
Yeah.
That was the first year.
First day of rifle season. First year he hunted. Then
he shot a 5 point, a 4 point, the spike, and a 4 point this year with a bow.
He's on a roll.
That's awesome. Are you to the point where you're going to say, hey, CJ, look for something a little bigger? Or you just like, it's all right, man, whatever you want to shoot?
No, he takes the opportunity when he gets it.
Yeah.
I think as a kid, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that at all. He's going to have to come to a point when he's 16, right, to start looking for antlers, and he'll be within the antler restriction. But until then, I say.
I agree. If it makes him happy and he wants to shoot it, I agree. Let him shoot it.
Well, and ultimately, that's what's going to get him hooked on it.
Yeah.
He's going to be hooked for life.
Yeah, because who wants to sit there and be unsuccessful?
Well, nobody.
Right.
But Matt's part of the biggest reason why he is successful. He's putting them on those deer. I had him last year when he shot that buck, but that ended up just being a little bit of luck.
Did he shoot a 3 point last year or 5 point?
A spike.
Oh, a spike.
What I said to him, I said, we were sitting in the tree.
Is that funky looking one?
No, or that was
2 years ago.
3 years ago.
3 years ago. That thing was funky looking, man.
That was that 5 point.
Yeah.
I said, we were sitting there, though, and I said to him, I mean, we watched a few doe, and then I saw that spike coming, and I was looking at it through the binoculars, I think, and I said, well, here comes a buck, CJ. I said, and it's a spike. I said, but if you don't want to shoot it, you know, we can wait for something, you know. I said, but if you want to shoot it, it's all yours. He's like, I think I'm going to shoot it. Yeah. I said, all right, well, it's coming a little bit closer, you know, we'll wait for a shot. And he got the deal done. That was pretty fun for me. That was the highlight of my season last year, other than my archery kill, you know. But it's cool to see those kids doing it.
Does he have a lot of friends that hunt, Matt?
I wouldn't say a lot, but most of them do.
Yeah.
But he probably has the most kills.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
he can
brag a little bit, huh?
Gives him bragging rights at school.
Just a little bit.
So it's been a solid week without hunting, and so my thoughts have turned to, because I'm tagged out here in PA. Well, you texted me earlier in the week and said, hey, you want to go back to Ohio maybe later in the year, which I would like to.
I think we're going to try if everything works out all right. In fact, we'll probably talk about that after we shut the mics off tonight maybe and just see. It may not be able to be worked in, but
it's going to depend on whether I can get my bathroom done or not.
Oh, yeah.
I've got that coming. I don't know. We don't have anything settled with that yet, though, on when it's going to happen.
I wouldn't worry too much about that with an Ohio tag burning a hole in your pocket.
Yeah.
Becky, we're going back to Ohio.
Yeah, she has an idea.
We got all winter to do that bathroom.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that big of a deal.
So we're hoping next year maybe Matt's work schedule works out a little bit better.
Yeah.
He was with us before down there for
the first year.
Yeah. And you guys saw some decent movement down there that year too, right?
Yeah. I saw a couple nice 8 points. Had some bow trouble.
That's right.
Oh, that's right. You had one. Did you have one open up on you?
I had to brought it open with an 8 point at 20 yards.
Yeah.
Had to let down.
That just sucks when that happens.
That does suck.
But it happens. That's one of the downfalls to.
Oh, so it opened up when you drew.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. That does suck.
That really sucks.
Yeah.
That's one of those downfalls to the mechanicals sometimes, I guess. But
I've been thinking about that. You and I talked in depth about this, and I might go to a fixed head this year if I can get it to shoot right. But my thing is I've never had a problem.
Well, I've been switching back and forth, but I switched back to the Rage Heads at the end of the season this year because I went back out and was shooting and just wasn't comfortable with the fixed heads I had on there. So I don't know. It's the difference between the two plays head games with me a lot. So it's all too like I was 100% confident putting those Rage Heads back on there after shooting them again. So that's what I went with. And ultimately that's what I took to Ohio with us. Right. So it's just one of those things.
So, and also, you know, my mind has drifted more back towards the archery end of things, and I think yours has too. And I've talked to you a couple times about you maybe looking at buying a new bow this year.
I'm going to, yeah. I think it's time for an upgrade.
So I think we should talk about that a little bit. You know, first of all, in selecting a bow, how would you go about selecting it? Well, I think the first thing, and I think we all agree, is to make sure you know your draw length, right?
Yeah.
So.
But even at that, I think some different bows will draw different on your length.
I was going to talk about that.
I think you're okay maybe within a half inch sometimes, because I've shot like, now I'm shooting 28 and a half, but I've shot a 28 and I've also shot a 29 before.
Right.
Just depends on the bow and the setup sometimes, I think. But so, for a long time, I didn't shoot a D-loop, so I needed a little shorter, or I could get away with a little longer draw length.
So to get your draw length, there's two ways to go about it. I like the one because it's easy, but the first way is to take your wingspan, get somebody to measure tip to tip on your fingers, and then just divide that by 2.5. And that's supposed to be your draw length. Huh. Now, I've had that be off a little bit.
It's a good starting point. It's not going to be exact.
Right.
Like I said, for each person, it's going to be. And it all boils down to mainly your anchor point.
Yes.
For new guys, it's a good starting point.
Yep.
For the guys that have been shooting for a long time, you know where you want to anchor that thing.
Right.
If it's a little long, you know it. You're going to have to drop it a half inch. If it's a little short, you're going to know it too.
So the other way to do it, and this is the way I like to do it, is to take your bow hand, whichever one that is, if you're left-handed, or if you're right-handed, it'd be your left hand. And if you're left-handed, it'd be your right hand. And make a fist and put it against the wall and look at the wall and then just have somebody measure to the corner of your mouth. From the wall to the corner of your mouth.
Yeah, and I never heard of that before.
Yeah.
That worked.
Oh, yeah. That one worked for me the best. Now.
You want to measure back to your anchor point.
That's right. Yeah. So, corner of your mouth is usually where your string goes. Me, because I touch my nose to my string, the tip of my nose to my string, and that's my anchor point for me. Because then I know it's always in the same spot.
Yeah.
For me, that puts the corner of the string about at the corner of my mouth. And if you're using a kisser button, well, then it's about where it ends up, right?
So, yeah, it makes sense. I never heard of that before, though, but yeah.
So there's two ways, but like you said, different manufacturers have different lengths. I know whenever I was shooting my PSC before, my draw length was, it was a little bit shorter. So, I think it was, I measured out at 29 and a half, and that's about where it ended up being. But with the Matthews, a 29 and a half is a little bit long for me. And I think they do that. I think they do that to gain a little bit of speed, because I think they'll cheat it a little bit. If they cheated a half an inch, that's a big difference, right?
Yeah.
In speed. So you can claim at a standard draw, which I think is a 29, right?
I think 30.
30?
Yeah.
So a standard draw, which is a 30.
Which nobody, not too many guys I know, are shooting 30 and above.
Right. But that gives you your speed.
What's your draw length?
28.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're right about the same height and the same draw length. I mean, to get to that 30, you almost would have to be over 6 feet, right?
Yeah, I know I'm at 29 and a half, like what I should be, but my Matthews, I'm shooting a 29.
Well, how tall are you?
Right, I'm 5'11".
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That, I don't know why they base the numbers off of 30, but I think that's because they can get, as they list their feet per second and everything, it makes it look a lot better at 30.
That's where they get the IBO speed.
Yeah, the IBO speeds.
And that's why I'm saying they cheated a little bit.
70
that.
Pounds, 30 yeah. inch draw.
Yeah, so all your specifications are made off probably what it's, most guys aren't going to shoot. Just being honest.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the 70 pounds. Now, that if you get a 70-pound bow, you'll shoot to 70 pounds. But most guys that I know anyway don't shoot a 30-inch draw. It's quite a bit shorter.
I'm sure Mark probably does.
Mark shoots like a 31.
Yeah.
But he's also...
6'2"?
Yeah, 6'3"? He's right around 6'2", I think, right?
So, I think that's the most important thing to know. I've had a couple guys come up to me since we've started this podcast and say, hey, I'm thinking about getting into archery because I've been listening to your podcast. Well, that's the most important thing. And by that, I mean, would you get that draw length? And you need to go down and shoot different bows to make sure which one's shooting, you know, lengthwise. But, and we'll get into that in a second. But when you pull to that, and you pull, and then the bow stops, you don't want cushion there, right? You want a hard stop. Like, because any kind of cushion in that back wall, it's called the back wall, any kind of cushion there will throw you off as far as your anchor point. So you could anchor off a little bit every time. If you're hitting that back wall, then it's a dead stop. It's not moving.
Well, preference-wise, you'd like a solid back wall. Maybe some of those guys like that little softer back.
Some guys do.
I mean, I don't.
Some guys do. You're right. And that is a preference thing. I think it's important, though, to have a solid back wall, because then you don't have that. You can't creep one way or the other, right?
Well, and you especially don't want one because you're using a back tension for most parts. You don't want to be pulling past the back wall when you're using a tension release either.
That's right. Yeah. So I think that's very important. The other thing, though, that's really important, and you're getting ready to go through this, Steve, is just because you've always shot, let's say, in your case, you've shot Hoyt a lot, right?
Yeah.
But not always.
No.
But let's say you do shoot a Hoyt, or you shoot a Matthews, or you shoot a PSE, or whatever. Go down there and shoot every bow on the rack. If you have a good bow shop like we do,
yeah,
they'll set you up for every single one and let you shoot every single one.
Right.
Because this is an important decision.
Well, first and foremost, before we even go any farther, the first thing that you're going to be basing all this off of is the price range you're willing to spend.
I agree. Well, let's talk about that for a minute. I think, personally, I have a higher-end bow, but I don't think that there's that much of a difference between the mid-range bow and the high-end range bow. Now, I'm not a professional. You know, those guys might tell you something completely different.
Well, there's differences. Otherwise, there wouldn't be the price difference.
Yeah.
But for me on my last one, like I knew I had a price in my head and I knew I wasn't going high end. Mm-hmm. So I purposely didn't have one set up to shoot it because I didn't really want to know because I knew I couldn't afford a $1,000 bow at the time. So there was no point in me having one or two set up to shoot.
Right.
That's just.
Yeah, so I agree. Have a number in your head whenever you go down there.
Because then all you're doing is comparing your, you know, the mid-range that you can afford to the that top end, and it's just you just might not get there.
Right. Well, you could even start off with the lower end or older used bow.
Yeah, so first and foremost, it has to be the price. Mm-hmm. Have a price set in your head. If you want a mid-range bow and you're willing to spend $500, then go down and shoot the bows that are in your price range.
Yeah.
If you know you want top end and you've got $1,500 to blow, go set up all the top ends. There's no reason to shoot a $500 bow.
Yeah.
That's where you need to start.
I've shot both and don't see a lot of a difference. Now I bought a used bow last time and I think that's a good option for most people because a lot of guys buy those bows and they only shoot them, what, maybe
1 year?
Yeah. And even at that, they might only shoot 100, 200 shots out of it.
Oh, yeah. Right? A lot of guys with those top-end bows are trading them in every year. And right. I heard a guy tell me one time that you spend that initial $1,000 or whatever, then usually they're still worth some money the following season. And on the resell or the trade-up, you can basically have a brand-new top-end bow for around $200, $300 a year then if you're willing to do that.
Well, I see where he's coming from. I just don't know. I don't know, man. I got a really nice bow right now, and it shoots. I can't see it getting much better than that.
Well, and the other thing, too, is like.
I bet they said that 10 years ago, too.
But right? You're kind of like me. You find a bow you like, you just keep
stay
it.
With it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I didn't trade mine in last year. I mean, this thing felt great. It was shooting great. I'm shooting a Hoyt Charger, medium of the road. I think out of the box, knew it was $600. Actually, I think it was $600 for the package.
Right.
Now, I didn't keep the...
Oh, you bought it new?
Yeah.
Oh, so it was an RTS, ready to shoot.
Yeah.
So it came with
everything. I think it might have been a leftover.
Yeah.
That's another thing, too. This time of year, you can get all the new flagships are coming out, so you can usually pick up last year's model if you're willing to do that for $200 or $300 cheaper than what it was last year.
And every bow company is going to claim this paradigm shift that they have in their bow that is changing the world.
Well, that's why you need to shoot them. But even to me, even that's only still a starting point because you really don't figure it out. When you're setting those bows up, you're just shooting them.
Yeah.
Basically, and most of the time, no sight, no stabilizers. And so really what you're looking for is you're looking for hand vibration and how the back wall is. And that's exactly, you really don't know how it's going to...
How smooth it draws.
So you don't figure out how that bow is really going to shoot for you probably till, I'm going to say... 300 arrows, 400 arrows in.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Until you really break it down to yourself and decide whether you're really going to like it or not.
You got to realize, though, 300, like, we shoot a lot. Most people don't shoot 300 arrows in a year.
Well, no, a lot of guys don't, but...
Most people don't even shoot 100 arrows
in a year. We'll have that in before January's over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, because we shoot in that league and...
Probably on those league days, we're probably shooting between... By the time it's all said and done, you're done messing around. Well, you're shooting 30.
Right.
But between the warm-up and maybe messing around after, we're probably shooting 50 arrows a day there.
Maybe more.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Depends how well it went.
Well, right. Matt and I always like to...
Try out the new bows.
Yeah, so we'll get done, and then we'll hang around for a while and have Kenny set us up a couple bows, and we'll go down and try them. We've done that for the last couple years. Hey, and he's really cool about that. He knows we don't have any intention of buying those usually, but...
But he also knows that if he takes care of you guys, you'll come back to him and buy stuff.
Well, I'm going to go back, yeah. I mean, that's where I'm going.
But that's how I ended up with my Halon.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's... So that goes, okay, so that gets back to it. Just make sure you don't have any preconceived notions in mind. I know that whenever I went down to buy my bow last year, that would have been the last bow that I thought I was going to buy. And because I had shot yours, Matt, and the jaw length was off. So it felt too harsh for me. Well, then whenever I got it set up for my jaw length, it was like, wow, that's smooth.
That brings up a great point, too. That's why you have to figure out your jaw length first, because if you're drawing a bow that's either too long or too short for you, it's not going to pull comfortably.
It's not going to feel right.
It's either going to break over too soon or way too late.
Yep.
Well, we have an inch different in draw length.
Yep. Yeah, and that'd make a huge difference.
Yep. So last year I went down there, and with all intentions on, I really thought I was going to buy an Elite whenever I walked in there. But to be honest with you, the Bowtech shot the best. I liked it the best out of all of them. I had a little concern about they have a history of limbs breaking. So I thought about that, and it was right there. The two were right there. It was the Halon and the Bowtech,
the BTX?
BTX, yep, that's it. So I like that BTX a lot. It's a nice bow. It shot really well. And the other thing about that bow was, here's something to think about also. Are you going to work on your bow, or are you going to take it down to the pro shop, right?
I am not going to work on my bow.
I'm not either.
Well, hey, now we've kind of been kicking around the idea maybe if I wouldn't mind like taking, you know, we've got that, we split a couple fletching jigs that worked out really well because we either get together and fletch up arrows or we pass that thing back and forth. So,
yeah.
We have a couple, what are those, Blitzenbergs?
Yep.
So, I wouldn't be opposed to buying a bow press and just splitting it three ways and being like, you know, hey, we could all,
make. But, there's a lot involved there, though. I mean,
I'm probably not working on mine either. But
it depends on what kind of winter you're having. Like if I don't have any projects this winter, I might think about something like that, but I got a lot going on. Here's the other thing. So my point behind that was, if you buy like a BTX, it's almost fully adjustable without a press.
Well, I think that's the new Hoyts that just came out. That's their claim to fame now, too. I think you can change your draw length and everything without pressing the bow. So
right. So that's something to keep in mind. Do you want to mess with it, and do you want to buy a press? Do you have a press? You know,
I'm with Matt. I'm probably not going to mess
up. I'm not either.
I mean, in I put a string on my bow, so there's not really much need for a press.
Right, for what we do.
Right. I agree. Now, Mark has a press, but that's all Mark does. I mean, that's his thing, man.
Well, yeah, he likes tinkering with them, so.
Yeah. So that's something to think about when you go down there, right? And you're going to do this, right? You're a month or two away.
I'll probably, after Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to hit them up when they're too busy. They're busy during hunting season, and then they're busy around Christmas, I think. And then I think it dies off for them. So I'll probably do what
Matt did.
Matt and I are pretty good. Like, we'll both shoot it and then be like, what'd you think of that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But as I'm setting up, and we'll probably go through them all.
Have you shot one yet that you're thinking, that you have in the back of your head, like, I like the way that one shot?
No.
My question, you thinking carbon?
Well,
you're paying for that carbon.
There was only one time this season that I thought I wished I had a carbon bow because...
your hand got cold?
No, we were sitting... I normally don't hold my bow.
Me neither.
But I was in a place where I knew that I was probably a good chance of getting a quick shot if a deer passed through. So yeah. I didn't think that I was going to have a chance to pull it maybe off of the holder without being detected, because we talked about it being down on the platform now.
Yep.
I held it for most of the time I was hunting, or I had it off that thing and it was leaning in. I had it leaning. But the last, when things really start to pick up there, the last hour and a half of daylight I held and it started getting cold. It was cold. It would, and they are cold.
Yeah.
Aluminum risers do get cold.
Which,
I can't believe that the carbon isn't going to get a little bit cold either.
No, I hear, from everything I hear, the guys that have them, they swear by them. Of course, if you spend that much money on an Abo, you're going to swear by it anyways.
Well, my thought is...
True, that's true.
Yeah. For the last...
Me and some of my clothing, you know? It's like, yeah, I spent a lot of money on that. I love it.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. That's, you got to, sometimes you have to be like that. Yeah. But I was, I'm willing to say when shit doesn't work, though.
Me
like,
too. Yeah, me
like
too.
This is getting off subject again, but I got cold with even some of the upper end clothes I had in Ohio the last morning we were out there. It started to get through me a little bit.
See, and I didn't. But you and I have different, like you were in that Stratus end and I was in the Fanatic end.
Oh, no, I had changed.
Oh, you were in your thicker.
I went away from my sickest stuff. This was something else.
Oh, well, that's why then.
Maybe. Yeah. You might be right.
No, I'm just kidding. I can tell you, I was not cold at all.
Base but layer wise,
the still. Game changer, and then we are getting off subject, but that's okay. I want to talk about this. The game changer in that whole thing is that neck gaiter, man. That neck gaiter is, oh.
But damn you, this is how I end up spending all my money, because this is why I have boot blankets.
And did they
my keep feet your feet? My feet got cold.
But they kept them warmer than you would have been. I can tell you that my
feet. All right, let's review Arctic Shield's boot blankets.
Let's do that right now.
This is so far off subject now that okay. we're way away from
that's
buying
right.
a bow.
Let's hear it. What did you think, honestly?
My honest opinion.
Yeah.
They're worth the money?
Yeah, because they don't cost very much.
I think I bought mine on Amazon for $39.
Yeah, like $29 or $39, yeah.
Okay. I was highly disappointed when we got it. Now, we're talking about, I didn't even put them on. I've only had them on twice this year.
Mm-hmm.
Once was with a heavier boot, which has 1,200 grams of PrimaLoft, and the other one was with my muck boots with whatever insulation they're using, which isn't much.
Right.
Which one? Muck boot, the hunting boot, what I think the brushland boot. But You told me, like, don't wear that heavy boot.
Yeah.
I don't wear heavy socks in those PrimaLoft boots anyway. I wear a heavier pair of socks in my muck boots, but I still have room for my feet to move.
Mm-hmm.
First sit, I think I had my heavier boots on when it was in the upper 20s, low 30s. And that's enough for me for my feet to get cold. They get cold in, 40-degree weather.
Yep, me too.
Okay, so.
And did I not, wait, I'm going to interrupt you real quick. Did I not tell you to slip a hand warmer in those boot blankets?
Okay, well, I didn't.
Okay,
We're just reviewing the.
Straight up boot blanket.
Straight up boot blanket without a.
Okay.
Hand warmer in it. So,
okay, go ahead.
Not too long, and I did. I put them on right after I get in the stand. Not too long after I'm in the stand, it's cold. Everything else is fine, and I can start to feel my feet getting a little bit cold.
Really?
Yep. And I'm like, damn. Like, this, not what I expected.
Yeah.
Okay? But fair enough. That happens, and usually another hour, my feet start getting numb. And then I'm moving them around, trying to get them warm, or I'm, trying to make body heat. That's just me, though. I mean, my feet get cold all the time. It's the one thing that will drive me away from a stand. And I usually wait too long. I usually wait till they won't even work coming down off the ladder or whatever. They get numb. So they never got to that point. The whole rest of the sit that
evening.
They stayed
about the same.
They stayed. I could feel that they were a little cold, but they never got numb and they never got any colder. So takeaway, I'll take that.
Right.
For me, that's worth it. If it allows me to stay there, then it's okay. So the next morning, I think it was
colder, considerably.
It was like 25, I think, or something. And the wind was blowing.
Yeah.
I think real feel that morning I looked was like, it was in the teens, 17 or 18 with the wind. Same thing, but different pair of boots. I put the thinner boots on. Still no hand warmers, just slipped those on. Same thing. The same exact thing happened with either pair of boots. My feet started to get cold, but it wasn't
The real
to the cold. Point where, and I know in that weather, in those muck boots with the rubber bottoms, they would have froze out. So, yeah, they were worth the money probably, Matt, because they didn't get numb and they didn't hurt and they weren't that cold. But they still weren't. It didn't keep my feet warm. If I'm being honest, no.
Right.
My feet still got a little cold. It didn't keep them warm, but it didn't freeze them out. So next time,
like I said, slip a hand warmer in there. And, man, that makes a big difference.
For me, I'll take that little bit of cold because that's better than what it normally is.
Right.
Because I haven't found a pair of boots that were able to keep them warm yet. Or even in that range where they got cold and just stayed there, you know.
So let's go back on subject just a little bit real quick here. Because we're about done with this anyways. Do you guys have any other advice for guys who are trying out bows? I mean, I think we hit the high points on what you need to look for and, you know.
Dude, just got to shoot them, I think. That draw length, you know, it is a big thing. I mean, make sure that you're drawing at least near where you should be. But even a half inch can make a difference.
And take your release with you.
Because that bow's going to feel, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're starting out, don't try pulling 70 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Start low.
Well, yeah, that's a good point, too. I mean, yeah, if you're brand new to this.
You don't want to start out. So if you're brand new to this, you don't. Look, I've given people my bow before and they couldn't even pull it back.
Excuse me.
And that's not. Look, that's not a big deal.
No, no.
Shoot a 60-pound bow or shoot a 55-pound bow, you know, just as long as you're getting, as long as you can pull it back and it's legal wherever.
Shooting a bow, you use different muscles in your back.
Yeah.
Some people don't use them.
Well, and if you're not, yeah, and if you haven't shot before, it's, you're using a whole different muscle group.
That's right. And if you are having issues with that and you know, you got, maybe you're thinking like, you want to do something to help out, do an exercise called a one arm row. So basically, or lawnmower or whatever you want to call it, you're just pulling up straight. You bend at a 90 degree angle. You're pulling that weight up straight back, just like you're starting a lawnmower. Be just like that. That'll help you out, or just shooting a lot will help you build up those muscles in your back.
The only other thing that I look at when I'm going to go do this is probably like the ATA length on them, which is the axle-to-axle length.
Yeah.
I typically like a smaller axle-to-axle just because I'm not very tall.
Right.
Now, they claim that you get a more accuracy out of a longer axle-to-axle, but for me to shoot like a 34 or even sometimes a, you know, 32 sometimes is long for me. You guys are shooting
30s.
Yeah. So the 30 usually is right what I like. For one, they're a lot lighter. Usually like a 30 is way lighter than a 34.
Yeah.
Now the whole accuracy thing, that might be true, but for what we're doing for hunting,
that's the thing about hunting, but
they're easy to maneuver around a tree stand.
Yeah, you're not going to bang it off your tree stand or off your seat or anything.
Well,
like
yeah, and
that.
If guys are hunting out of blinds, you're not hitting the top cam off the top of the blind.
That's right.
Or something.
I hunt out of a climber. I have the rail.
Yeah.
I have to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You shoot, when you pull, does that, your bottom axle stay behind the rail or does it go up over it?
It goes over it.
Yeah, so if you're swinging a longer bow, you're having issues there too. Now, with that said, I just saw that. Well, you sent me that new Matthews bow came out this week.
Yep, the Tri-Ax or something.
The Tri-Ax. Like
that. Yeah.
It's a 28 axle to axle.
Is it 28?
28.
Yeah.
Which is really short.
And it's supposed to be, you know, like I said
it's
before.
It's the mini-me of the Halon 30. Or 32, I guess. Whatever.
Like I said before, everybody's claiming a paradigm shift in bows, because you know that's what they want you to buy that new bow. But their claim is that it's the most vibration-free and quietest bow ever made
on the market. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I am anxious to shoot one of those just to see.
I don't know.
28 might be a little short.
What was? Do you know what the price was on that?
Has to be $1,000.
It is. It was like $999 or $1,099.
Well, but you look at Hoyt's new bows; they're $1,500.
Well, for the carbon bows, yeah. They make an RX1 aluminum, I think. Don't quote me on that name, but they make an aluminum that's comparable to that. That's around as that same price as that.
Their new tri-axis. One is the red WRX carbon.
Yeah,
that's their main one.
That one was, if I remember what I was looking at, was like $1,500.
It could be around there. I thought that's $13 to $14.
Pile of money for a bow, man.
Well, we talked about this before. When you start getting into that kind of money, and I look at the abuse that I put on mine.
Well,
that thing goes through Laurel and Brush out in Ohio and gets banged into a tree when you're pulling it up sometimes. And
I was worried about that this year because I'd put mine through some real abuse. But you look at my cams, even they're a little dinged up.
Well, look, I mean, if you're buying one to do that with, that's what I know what I'm gonna do with it.
Yeah,
I know I'm probably gonna be abusing it a little bit here and there.
You didn't buy it to hang it on the wall and look at it.
No,
I agree.
I agree too. It's not a, I mean, but I don't know. I don't even know where my price range is gonna be. I don't know.
You don't have any idea at all.
This time I'm going to go in and shoot some of the top-end bows just because I want to see if I happen to drop down to a mid-range or a lower range. Or if I go to maybe a leftover of last year's, I just want to know what the difference is now. Right. I'm curious enough to know. And I'd like to say I'm going to set my cap at $1,000. But whew. I told... Now, look,
I Christmas, never thought I'd hear Steve say that.
Christmas ever. Is... Now, listen, that's not money out of my pocket.
I know.
I'm planning on selling mine.
Yep.
And I'm also planning on... I told...
Everybody's getting you gift cards.
Gift cards for gym. So, yeah. So, I'm hoping to only have... That's what, you know... And it's all based on price. You know what?
I'm not getting on your case. I just never thought I'd hear you say that.
No, ever. I never thought I'd hear myself say that either, because that middle-of-the-road bow's
so
killing
when you,
deer.
So, when you do this, will you then... keep that bow for a long period of time.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah. Or will you trade it in every year, like what you were talking about?
Something's going to have to really, like,
a game
jump
changer,
up and surprise me. That no, I just can't see it. How can it get any better, and why are they so much is what my question is.
And the worst part, they don't hold the value.
Right.
No, like a gun. If I go buy a $1,000 gun. That
well, guns probably, go up in value.
Sometimes.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Most of the time. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, as far as this, you said that, you know, your thought process and everything's back on archery hunting and stuff, but we're knocking on the door of, I'm not quite there yet, but
no,
we're knocking on the door of our...
rifle season.
The big Pennsylvania two-week rifle season is only 7 days away now. This time next week we'll be breaking it in with... few beers on Sunday night, getting ready to go into Monday morning, and
getting ready for you to sleep in.
I have no tags for the first day.
Me neither.
So
you and my boy get to hang out.
Yeah, CJ and I are going to do some cooking, and
yeah, that's right. CJ doesn't have a tag either.
No, that's I gotta go.
That's pretty cool, man. Well, that'll be good for you though. I mean, you can focus on you, and you know, when was the last time you got to do that on the first day?
5 years ago.
Right. Yeah, that's been a while.
Yeah.
So you got any... well, what's nice about that is, I mean, I love killing deer with my bow, but you said about wishing that you were... I kind of wish that I had that tag back now, you know? The archery season and everything was great, but...
I don't know, man. Would you really trade that buck in for a tag? No, but
it's more or less the... It all comes back to the tradition thing. Matt and I have been doing the same thing ever since we were both little kids. You know, we go to the family camp and
been hunting with Steve for 22 years, like 20 since I was 12.
Yeah, Matt's like my little brother. We argue like brothers and love like brothers, and but it's always and it's back when it was back in the day it was. my grandfather was still alive, my dad was still alive, and it was a family thing, and we just try to keep that tradition going, and I wouldn't give any of that up for anything. The only thing I'm lacking, I'm still going to go do it, I'm just lacking a tag.
Yeah.
So I become the proverbial camp maid.
Not a bad place to be.
Right.
No. You don't have, especially if it's going to be cold and snowing sideways and shit.
Your feet won't get cold in there.
No, they'll be propped up on the fireplace.
Well, are you going to have either of the other nephews with you?
I'm not sure. I need to discuss that. Actually, Mark, my brother-in-law, has the first Monday off, so he's going to take his boy Monday. Then Tuesday, I'll see if he wants to hunt. Yeah, I'll go with him.
So it's pretty important to point out that here in PA,
everything
shuts down. I don't have work on Monday. There's no school.
No. 2 days Monday. Off.
I mean, it's still a...
it's a holiday.
I don't know too many other states that do that. And we take it for granted because...
Yeah.
It's a big deal. It's not quite as... I don't think we quite put the hunters in the woods we used to on those.
You know, I was looking at the numbers the other day because we had talked about that recently, and we've lost about 40,000 hunters since 2006, which isn't that bad.
That's not horrible.
Right. But you know what has happened? Bow hunting license sales has increased about 20 to 25%.
Do you think that's because of the added crossbow?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Well, that made a difference. That made a lot of guys, number one, that couldn't hunt or couldn't pull the bows back or had, you know, had some kind of...
Didn't have the time to shoot and keep it sighted in.
Yeah. Yeah,
and do you really want somebody going out there with a bow, like... You know, just winging.
No.
Arrows.
I mean, it gives options, which is a good thing. There's some things I don't agree with the crossbow season, but for the most part, it's good. I mean, it puts some hunters back in the woods for sure.
So, you guys are getting ready to... Well, Matt, you're getting ready to go out for rifle season. If you were going to do the same thing with a gun, how would you select a gun? I know for me, here in PA, where I hunt at, I shoot a 30-30, which I haven't had to shoot it for a few years, but man, I tell you, we don't get too many more shots over 100 yards.
Well, that's what... Matt's the gun guy here. He's got a whole plethora of... He's got a pretty good collection, but...
So what would your thought process be, Matt?
A lot of it goes off your family.
Yeah.
Like, I shoot an odd-six because my dad had one. I got my boy a 308 because that's what he wanted. There's just too many choices out there.
Why do you think he wanted a 308?
Well, he wanted a 30-odd-six, but I told him to pick something different because I already had one.
Right, yeah.
And he could shoot it anytime he wanted to.
I think those... Like he said earlier when we were talking, we were out there shooting today. Actually, I bought a new scope for mine and was trying to get it sighted in. But those 30 calibers around here with a heavier bullet usually do well because we don't get a lot of long shots.
That's right.
And we got a lot of brush.
There's a lot of thick stuff. And that's just an all-around good, you know, caliber to be shooting around here for whitetails.
Yeah, I am looking for a new gun, but not for here. I'm not looking for something for PA. I'm looking for when we go.
Well, a good 30 caliber hunting for out west to do the same. You just need to make a load.
Well, I'm just not going to shoot that 30-30 out there. That's all.
No,
not that. You're not.
You know what I'm saying? You know, so I would. I think a lot of that, you know. When you're deciding to pick a gun, right, and a caliber of gun and all that, is what are you going to do with that gun? Do you want it as an all-purpose gun? You know, are you going to make trips out west? Or are you just going to hunt for deer in Pennsylvania? Are you going to hunt for bear in Pennsylvania? What are your goals with that gun, right?
Now, that's why I think a lot of guys fall back on the
308s
and the 30-06s. Yeah. And
And some guy just wants the biggest, baddest thing out there.
That's right.
Yeah, that happens a lot, too.
Well, and I, you know, because I was...
We have no restriction on our rifles here that you can hunt with in rifle season. You can go... Right. Well, you can't... There's a minimum. What's the minimum?
Is it 223?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what it is. Yep.
But other than that, you can go as big as you want. I mean, there's no stipulation on, you know, cartridges.
50 caliber.
But I mean, really, I mean, you can, and a lot of guys have a, well, you know, pretty good collection they can play with. It's just because a lot of guys, this is all they hunt, is 2 weeks of rifle season. And when the money gets spent, it gets spent on guns. And we play around with, he's heavy into reloading.
That's what I was just going to say. So you're reloading and everything like that. Like, do you do like, do you have a ballistics chart that you use? How do you, I'm not up on guns. I'm just not.
I go off the lineman book for reloading, pick a powder, and start from there.
Mm-hmm.
Just came up for a load for the 308. Came pretty good for Steve today.
Yeah, he's got it dialed in pretty good. That thing was... That 308's... I'm not sure how expensive of a gun that was. My dad bought that for me, you know, I think when I turned 13. It's a Mossberg. I don't know the model number on it, but I want to say, no, I don't know. I can't guess either.
So would you hunt with that out west?
I would probably take the 30-06 out west, and I'd have Matt work me up a load for it. You obviously, you're not going to shoot a 180-grain bullet out there if you're trying to shoot. Well, we shoot between like a 165 and a 180-grain usually here. You're going to want something a lot lighter if you're shooting distance out there. But it'll definitely do the trick. I mean, you just need a load for it. I don't necessarily... I'm not going to buy another rifle for it. I'll take a load. I'll have him work me up a load that I can shoot at.
That's what you can do for me, too, Matt.
One for the 30-30.
No. I'm going to get a new gun. It's just I'm not sure what I want yet. And I guess it depends on... You know, how far into this I'm going to go. I don't know.
And when you go out there, it's going to depend on how far of a shot you're willing to take. You're going to want to be taking, you're going to want to be able to at least take, I'm going to say, like a 400-yard shot.
Right, and that would be, would probably be my limit, I would think. Because other than that, if you're shooting past that, you really got to be practicing, I would think, right?
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
And yeah. Even at 400, you better be practicing.
Well, and I'm just not... You know, that I'm not going to practice with a gun that often. It's just not something I'm going to do. That may change. I don't know.
It's the same way of knowing your abilities of your bow. We're not, we shoot and practice, all of us, at 80 yards, but we're not going to take an 80-yard deer shot.
Nope.
You know, it's all knowing your limitations. Some guys, I'm sure, feel comfortable shooting certain guns out west that have been doing it all their lives at 600, 700, 800 yards maybe even at times.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm probably with you. I'm not, we don't even have the ability here to shoot like 800 yards anywhere, do we?
Yeah, West Branch.
Can you go that far there?
800.
That's a long ways.
That's a long ways.
I didn't realize they had a range that long.
I didn't until last year.
We might have to check out.
What is that? Is that a quarter of a mile?
Don't ask me 800 that.
800 yards?
That's a question for Siri. I don't know.
Okay. Well, yeah, so I'm going to be looking into that. I thought about maybe a 300 Win Mag. I was thinking about maybe getting one of those. Or maybe just going with...
You Eastern guys always mag up when you go out west.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
no, listen, I don't know.
I'll be honest with you. Everything that I know about Western...
I'm talking like I live out there or something.
It comes from listening to... You know, Steve Rinella and Giannis, you know, that meat eater guys.
Those guys, I think...
because
Giannis and those guys will swear by, like, 270s.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like the, you know, old school. Some of those guys, you know, just use what works. Yeah, that's basically what it boils down to. You know, that's why... That's the whole reason why we're using the guns we're using. As far as, you know... Two of those guns that I have, I own two 30-06s, but they were handed down to me. One was my dad's and one was our grandfather's gun. So
Yeah. That's
how I ended up with those. And, you know, I don't know how they ended up with those caliber guns, but that seems to be one of the more popular choices here. It's like a 30-06. I'd say
a 30-06 is probably the most popular around here.
You can do so much with it, too.
270 is pretty popular.
270, yeah.
Both those, you can do about anything you want to anywhere in the country with either one of those two. I'm pretty positive you can.
What's the nomenclature on that? How does, you know, so... What does I would imagine a 270 is .270 bullet size, right?
Yeah, that's what the and 30 calibers.
.30. Yeah. And what does the .06 mean in the .08? Do we know that? Yep.
The .06 derived from the 30 cal is the first part, and the gun was made in 1906 by Winchester. That's where the .06 part comes from.
Yeah, I think they were both previously government rounds.
What? You mean that in the 08?
Yeah, the 308 was... those were both commercialized by Winchester, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The 30-06 and the 308 both. And I think the as far as the NATO round or the government rounds, the 308
they were
replaced the 30-06... You know,
right? Because of accuracy, I believe. Right?
Well, I don't know what the reason was, but both that the 30-06 round and the 308 round were commercialized by Winchester for hunting rounds.
Okay. Well, interesting going on. I said to you guys before about. Having guys come in and give us an update on their season. I think you know what happened with Steve and I's season. Matt, you had a good season because CJ had a good season.
Yeah.
You saw quite a few buck though, right?
Yeah, just nothing monster, but I saw quite a few deer.
There's some big ones out there, right?
Yes, they are. We've
got some big ones on camera and stuff like that.
They went nocturnal.
Yep.
Archery season could have went... 1 week longer.
Yeah.
I agree. I think things were just heating up there when it went out.
Yeah, the rut seemed to be in full force this week.
That very last day that you were out, I was sitting at the camp table drinking a couple beers, and Matt was hunting that last day. I was watching the hot doe come through by the window.
Was there
two different bucks chasing it?
Really?
He's out in the woods. And
it didn't come anywhere near me.
No, I saw a spike.
Yeah. And were they nice bucks?
Well, him and... his dad and I were sitting there. The first one I saw come through, I saw the doe run by, and I said to Mike, I said, there goes a doe. I said, I'll bet she's hot. And I no sooner got that out of my mouth, and she was being chased by a little buck there. I could see the horns, but it wasn't anything real big then. We went and got a pair of binoculars and was looking, and second one that came through, following them both right up through there, he was a pretty good one. But
yeah.
They circled around in some high grass there for a while, and I thought, well, maybe Matt's having some action, but he got back. What'd you see?
A spike.
That happens, man. That's the way it goes.
Went out Monday to get my cam, saw two buck chasing, one nice 8-point.
On Monday.
Yeah.
A lot of guys this week I was talking to are seeing a lot of action. Oh, and there's another dead deer, big buck laying up on the road by my house this week, too.
Again.
Amy texted me. That's two this year.
Yeah.
Happens every year, at least one or two.
Yep. So, at any rate, we got... what I was getting at was... I wanted to get some of our previous guests on to give us an update on how their season's going. And we do have Garrett Prawl, the DIY sportsman. He's going to call us up. And, you know, Garrett has a... new podcast, and you and I have listened to it a few times, right?
Yeah.
And he does a nice job with that.
Yep.
Garrett, I think they've been doing some reviews and stuff like that, which we haven't done a whole lot of.
No.
We did one tonight, right?
Yeah, I guess that was our first official review, the Arctic Shield boot blankets, right?
Yeah. So we're going to get Garrett on the line, so if everybody just hold on for a minute, and then... after Garrett's done, we'll do our beer review. Okay, so we have Garrett on the line here. Garrett, welcome back. Wanted to check in and see how your season's going, and we appreciate you coming back to give us an update.
Yeah, no problem.
So how has your season been going?
Well, you know, I think the last time we talked was right before I left for Colorado, and I ended up shooting my first mule deer when we went out there. It was just a public land trip. Me and a couple guys went up and backpacked up in the mountains a ways, and I shot some people would call it a 3x4. Basically, it was a 9-pointer. It was like a 3x4 with brow tines. And that was pretty exciting because, I mean, like I said, that was my first mule deer in the whole experience. We all got, you know, to help out a little bit, taking the meat back down to the vehicle.
Right.
It was a fun trip.
Yeah, that was a beautiful buck. I mean, we saw the pictures, and we'll post a picture of it on the webpage there.
After you shot that, how was that pack out for that meat? Was it something that you figured it was going to be, or more taxing on you guys than you thought?
You know, it wasn't too bad. I mean, it was all downhill, and getting the meat back to camp, everybody kind of helped out. We all took a quarter and just kind of slung it over the shoulder and brought it back to camp that way. And then after that, we put it on the pack, and then I just walked it back down by myself. And at that point, it was almost all pack trail, so it was mostly downhill, and it wasn't too bad at all. I don't know how much the pack weighed, but yeah, it wasn't too bad.
How did you target that area, Garrett? I know you guys specifically targeted initially for elk, right?
Yeah, we went there a couple of years ago for elk, and we ended up seeing a bunch of mule deer. So my plan was this year to target mule deer, and the other guys were going after elk with muzzleloaders. And then, you know, if I tagged out early, that I had the choice then to buy an over-the-counter elk tag. But like I said, after I tagged out the second day, I pretty much just tried to help the other guys out as much as I could after elk instead of trying to buy my own tag. And we chased them pretty hard for the rest of the week. And one of the guys actually got a shot off at a cow on the last day, or a bull, excuse me. But then, we didn't end up connecting. So we're hoping that if we get back to that same area again, we'll have essentially one more year of experience in that area. So we should be able to get something done on the elk side of things.
So next year when you go back, will you buy both tags, or will you just go elk next year? Or, you know, what are you thinking there?
I don't know. I mean, the mule deer is a lottery. So
it is.
It took me one preference point to get that mule deer tag, but I definitely apply for them again. I thought it was a pretty fun hunt trying to go after them versus the little bit different style of elk hunting. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I want to definitely shoot an elk at some point, but I also got a couple other states that I have points now for. I got a couple points built up for Wyoming, and I know my buddy Boudreaux Boswell wants me to get out there in Utah to chase after some elk. So it might be a Colorado mule deer thing and elk in some other state. I'm not quite sure yet.
How many guys went with you on this trip?
There was two other guys.
So there was three total.
Mm-hmm.
When those guys had elk license and you had the mule deer tag, did you split up initially, or did you stay together when you were hunting?
We would always split up, and then we just camped together.
Okay. So that had to be, you were the only one that had a mule deer tag then? That's cool.
How hard is it to draw that mule deer tag?
It was supposed to be pretty easy. The year that I applied the first time, it said like a 94% chance of drawing, and I didn't get it.
Wow.
So then the next year is pretty much a guarantee.
Yeah.
So that's great, though, that you got to get one on. I mean, you go out there, and man, there's nothing better than going on those trips and killing. Because you know you only have a limited time to get it done, and to get it done, I mean, it feels great. How about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a fun experience.
So how has your whitetail season been going so far?
Well, I haven't shot at anything yet. I've been hunting exclusively in Minnesota so far this year. Usually I go back and forth and hunt Wisconsin as well as Minnesota.
Right.
But I've been trying to force myself to learn a particular public marsh that's pretty close to where I live. And in order to help me do that, I have restrained from buying a Wisconsin tag to take away the temptation. So I've been hunting that marsh every time. And I've been doing a couple trips where I've pretty much just done some in-season scouting and didn't even really bring the bow along with me. And I've got to a point now where I've started to see a lot of deer. And I think I'm averaging almost 2 deer seen per set, which for public land for me is really high. Like, that's well higher than my normal yearly average. Right. But I haven't seen a big buck yet. All the stuff I've seen is does and yearling bucks. And late season, I'd be happy pretty much filling the freezer with whatever. But up through the rut, I usually like to try and give myself an opportunity at shooting a larger buck.
Sure.
What does the what kind of pressure does that public land there get during the rut? Is it fairly heavy pressured?
During the rut, it isn't terrible. I mean, there's times when I can go, you know, to a particular parking spot, and I'll be the only vehicle there. There's, you know, plenty of parking spots around the perimeter of the area. But we just had firearm season, which, of course, is during the rut in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And so I guess, you know, before I was saying, I guess, would be kind of pre-rut. But during the rut and during the firearm season, there's a lot of guys that hunt there. I couldn't give you an exact number. I would guess it's well over 100 guys that are in there, at least on the opening day.
Whoa, that's a lot. Do you particularly try to get yourself away from the people then? Do you go, your tactics try to get you farther back into the woods than the majority of the guys go? Or do you kind of use pressure to your advantage?
Usually that's always been my strategy when I've hunted in Wisconsin. This was the first year that I actually hunted with a gun in Minnesota. Usually I've either hunted the rut in Wisconsin or gone up to a bow only area. So my plan was, at least on opening day, I went 1.75 miles back in and just hunted exit routes.
Yeah.
And I saw one deer that morning. And then after that, I started doing some more scouting and moving my stand around a little bit and hunting over a doe bedding area. And I actually ended up seeing a lot of movement where the deer were just moving on their own, since it was a little bit earlier in November than what the Wisconsin deer season would be.
Right.
And so that's when I started seeing a lot of those deer. I would just put my stand up over looking basically some dogwood, and I could see deer milling around there pretty much every set.
Wow. So, Garrett, are you far enough north where you're running into wolves at all?
No, not quite that far. Okay. You probably have to go up another probably 50, 60 miles to get into an area where you start to get some wolves. And then obviously the further up you go, the higher their density becomes. You'll hear reports every now and then of wolves being kind of in that area where I hunt, but it's pretty rare.
Yeah. And do you, because you're hunting relatively close to an area with wolves, I mean, do you carry a sidearm with you or anything like that?
No, I usually don't.
No. I think I probably would. I think that'd probably scare me enough, just even with their, I mean, 50 miles isn't very far for a wolf to travel, I don't think. But so are you not going to hunt Wisconsin at all this year?
No, I think I will. In fact, I was planning on hunting this weekend for their firearm season, and I ended up having a little bit of a medical emergency, and now I can't really draw my bow back or, you know, climb a tree stand or whatever for probably another week and a half, 2 weeks. So I'll just be doing late season, and I'll probably hunt both Wisconsin and Minnesota late bow.
Wow. Well, we hope you get better, man.
Yeah. Hope you're all right.
Yeah. Also, so since we've talked, and I don't think we talked about this on our podcast with you on here, you have started your own podcast, and we have brought it up on our podcast. How's that been going so far?
You know, it's been, you know, steadily gaining steam since we started off. Mm-hmm. I think we've got some pretty good topics for the most part. In this first, the first six episodes that we've put out, we've basically been trying to cover things that are really relevant on the gear side of things and the strategy side of things. You know, to this point, we haven't really done any interviews. It's just been basically me and my partner, Boudreaux Boswell, going back and forth. And he has a wildlife biology background, whereas I have kind of the engineering background. And we're both pretty much hardcore gear nuts, so we get some interesting topics going.
How'd you meet old Boudreaux?
He's on the Saddle Hunter Forum. He's on Archery Talk. So I pretty much have known him through the forums. We've, you know, talked through Facebook Messenger and whatnot a little bit over the years.
Okay. And I just kind of wondered that when I started listening and you guys weren't, like, together. I just wondered how you guys, where your relationship was there or how it started.
Right, and he's actually living out in Utah right now, so
yeah,
we're definitely on different ends of the country there.
Yeah, that's cool, though. I mean, you guys just get together on a day a week there and then call each other for the podcast.
Yeah, we're putting out right now on every other week.
Yeah.
And that's the schedule for the foreseen future.
Oh, okay. That's good. What's the whitetail situation like out in Utah?
I'm not sure if they have whitetails.
I was wondering.
At least not in the mountains where he's at. He has pretty much elk and mule deer that he can chase. But then he spent a lot of time when he was younger in Missouri. In fact, he's in Missouri right now chasing whitetails.
Oh, cool.
And he spent some time in Virginia. He spent a lot of time growing up in whitetail habitat.
So I saw that you got your mule deer on camera. I watched the video of it. That was pretty cool. Give everybody an idea where they can find that video at.
Yeah, so if you go on YouTube, and you can either look at it through my channel, DIY Sportsman, or you might even be able to type in DIY Mule Deer Colorado 2017. That should pop up pretty close to the top.
Yeah. It's a good video too. It's certainly a different type of situation as far as terrain than what we're used to around here. So that was pretty cool to watch, you know. So the other thing is where can everybody find your podcast at?
Yeah, so it's the DIY Sportsman Podcast, but it's part of the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can go to sportsmansnation.com or just type in Sportsman's Nation Podcast in Google, it should lead you to the same website. And that Sportsman's Nation basically is a collection of not only my podcast, but also the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, Land and Legacy podcast, and Transition Wild podcast right now. Mm-hmm. So if people go to that Sportsman's Nation network, then they get basically content from all those different podcasts on one RSS feed.
That's cool. That's a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
I think it gives everybody a place where they can go and just pick and choose what they want to listen to or find, you know, something interesting as far as podcasts go.
Yeah. That is a cool thing. Yeah. He did a pretty cool thing there. So, yep. Garrett, what's on the agenda for the rest of your hunting season here?
Well, it's basically just going to be late season whitetails with the recurve, and it'll be a mix of that same marsh that I've been hunting in Minnesota. I think I got a pretty good bead so far on what should be a late season pattern, assuming the food sources don't change. And then Wisconsin, I'll just basically have to do some in-season scouting to try and find what the hot food sources are. And I'd like to try and shoot at least two deer before the end of the season. I don't really have any requirements, I guess, on size, but just some freezer fillers so that, you know, we can pretty much make it through the rest of the year while being able to eat venison.
What is a typical food source in a marsh like what you're hunting?
You know, pretty commonly what I've seen the deer do is they'll actually start feeding on like local agriculture.
Uh-huh.
If they can dig something up. So you might see them bedding, you know, somewhat deep into the marsh, but then you'll see their trails basically going through either woods, or sometimes they'll bypass the woods and just go through marsh until they can get, you know, across a road into somebody's private land.
Oh,
a lot
okay.
of times they won't actually get there until after dark. So you pretty much just have to find the tracks and figure it out that way.
Right. You're not hunting field edges there.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you had that traditional in your hand yet?
Yeah, I've hunted with it pretty much every early season hunt. So
okay.
Colorado, I use the compound. And then just that first week of firearms in Minnesota, I used a shotgun. But every other hunt has been with that recurve,
okay.
RK1 from Striker New Breed.
I didn't know if you just specifically saved that for the late season hunts or if you used your recurve before that.
Yeah, I've been getting pretty accurate with it. So it's been pretty exciting to just kind of grow and get a little bit more precise with without having to use the sights.
Yeah.
I have a relative that just shot a really nice 10 point with a recurve, and man, more power to you guys, man. I'm not sure, you know, that's, you're giving up probably 20 yards, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, I'd, on perfect conditions, I'd probably take a 25 yard shot. That's pretty close to my point on distance. Beyond that, I probably wouldn't. But I'd assume that most of the shots that I'd probably have are going to be inside of 20.
Sure.
Just the way that I set up my stand for it.
And you still have yet to get one of those traditional. Have you killed? You haven't killed one yet with that traditional, have you? Or am I wrong?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Okay. So, yeah, last year you had the video where that doe miss, and now I'm looking forward to, let's put one on video. I'm rooting for you. I want to see that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Well, we're rooting for you all around, Garrett. We really appreciate you coming back on, giving us a little update on your season. Man, when we saw that buck you shot this year, the mule deer buck, we were pretty pumped for you.
Cody texted me right after you sent to him that picture, and we both thought that was awesome.
Yeah. And we're looking forward to doing something like that here coming up. We're just, you know, we're not sure exactly what yet.
But yeah, well, let me know if you guys have any questions trying to plan that.
I appreciate that, Garrett. Well, hey, again, thanks for coming on. Do you want to plug your stuff one more time? Give everybody your YouTube page, your website, and
podcast.
Yep, so the website is DIY-sportsman.com. You can also find me on YouTube. The channel name is DIY Sportsman, and same thing on Facebook, DIY Sportsman. Instagram, the name is DIY_Sportsman. And for the podcast, you can search the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network.
Great. Hey, we hope you get better, and we hope that the rest of your season goes well.
He meant
what?
Physically better, not better.
No, that's what I meant. Yeah. So
when you said that, I was like, what? What's he trying to tell him? We hope you get better. We hope you're a better shot, Garrett.
We appreciate you coming back on, and I'm sure we'll be in touch. So
yeah, keep in touch with us.
Will do. All right, guys.
Thanks.
Okay. Let's do the beer review here. Today we have what, Steve?
It's a beer from Erie Brewing Company, and it's their Railbender Ale. And it's a Scottish-style ale. Comes in at 6.8%. And I don't know why'd we choose this beer? Because it was something we hadn't tried.
That's right. I've never had a Scottish-style ale before.
Me neither. But
me neither.
It was something that we were willing to try. And Matt's with us tonight, so we all had one of these. And Matt, you're basically an IPA guy too, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as far as craft beer goes.
I've been drinking Ithaca Creeker all night.
So this is a 6.8% beer. It doesn't give the IBUs on it.
No, but it's not.
But it's not supposed to be a hoppy beer.
It's not really bitter.
No.
It's more sweet.
It is kind of sweet. It's clearer than I thought it was going to be. I thought it would be a little bit darker than that. But it's probably like a, it's very amber. Similar to an amber. I thought it would be darker. But it's a good beer. I like it.
Yeah, taste-wise, it's pretty good. I would drink it.
It tastes good. I don't know if I could drink multiple in a row. But
right. Well, you probably never thought you could drink multiple IPAs in a row either.
No, that comes with practice.
Yep.
Yeah, that's for sure. No, it's not bad. I mean, I would drink it again.
Yeah.
Is that how we're going now? I keep forgetting how we're going to do this. Or is it like a thumbs up, thumbs down? Would we buy it again? I remember one time we were like, Would you buy it again? That was going to be our review, right? Would you buy it again or would you drink it again?
Would I buy that? I know. I probably would not buy that again. But would I drink it again if somebody else bought it for me? Yeah, I would.
So, yeah.
If you got me one for Christmas, I would. I'd drink a six-pack of it.
I can't say if it's a good Scottish ale because this has to be the first one Scottish I've ever drank. Ale.
I've never had a
Scottish ale. So I don't have anything to compare it to. So I can't say that if you guys out there like a Scottish ale, that it's a really good one. I don't know. It's a good beer. I like it. Yeah,
it's a good beer.
I'm with you, though. I don't know that I would.
I don't know.
I don't know if I'd buy it.
You wouldn't buy it.
Is that like a thumb sideways?
Yeah, I think
so. Yeah, that's where we go with that, I think.
Yeah.
Thumb sideways. Don't give it an up, down. We're shooting. Shooting down the middle on
that. While we're doing that, I mean, I'm drinking a Terrapin High Five IPA.
Never had one.
Neither have I.
Well, there's one in there. You can have one. It's pretty good.
Thanks for
the offer. A little malty. It's not considerably malty. I mean,
this Railbender is all malt.
Yeah,
but
that's
what
that's supposed to be.
Right, but it's a. It's balanced good.
This is supposed to be a California style IPA. I think, man, it's okay. It's not great for an IPA, but it's good. I might buy it again. But you have to put that into perspective, right? So, like, right now, I've got that High Five, right? And it's sitting in the six-pack shop right next to... let's say a headhunter. No,
well,
I'm not buying it.
We're not in the best of the IPA season right now.
Well, no, there was not. Headhunter right by it.
Well, yeah, but that's a year round thing.
Yeah.
Look out, come a month and a half from now,
January.
Yeah,
I mean
we're not that far from it.
We're in the pumpkin beer season.
Ugh.
Yeah, the only great thing about pumpkin beer season is the great IPA season's just around the corner.
That's right. I mean, I am looking forward to Hop Slam and...
I can't wait to taste the Nugget Nectar again. I can't get that out of my head, but...
Yeah, but then you'll be disappointed all over again. This is a bad batch.
It was.
I really don't like this batch.
It was a bad batch.
I'm kind of looking forward to a Hop Juju.
Oh, me too. Ooh,
oh, we can and
get Juju again.
Speaking of like seasonal IPAs, supposedly
Stone just came out with a new one. Thad and I were talking about it today whenever we were bottling our double IPA. Apparently, Stone has some kind of contest at their facility.
Between the brewers?
Yep. And whoever wins gets to put out this special double or special beer.
That is a great contest.
Yeah. So
for me.
Yeah. So I think it just came out. Thad was talking about it. He told me about it.
What's Victory's? I want to say it's what's Victory's seasonal that comes out that we like? The double.
That's a good question.
No, come on. You know. It's on the top of your head right now. No, they're replacing it. Oh, man.
Man, I'm stuck on Dirt Wolf.
No.
They're replacing it. If it's so good,
Victory's flagship. The one that you always said had a little onion hint to it.
Oh, yeah. Hop Ranch. Hop Ranch.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're getting rid of Hop Ranch, and they're going to make another they're making another beer to replace that.
Hop Ranch is a good beer, but I do...
A seasonal.
I do get, like, that hint of onion in there.
I know, you told me.
Yeah.
You've ruined that beer for me, just so you know.
Because you can now taste the onion.
Well, you said...
Do you not like onion?
Love onions, but he said to me one time, like, the seasonal IPAs are the best. The ones that they bring out in January and February are typically the, with the exception of Headhunter and Perpetual is pretty good. Like you're all year IPAs at some of these places.
Ruination.
Ruination. Yeah, you're not going to beat that. But we had split a case of Hopper Inch one time, I think, and he's like, we got together one time after I had been drinking it, and he's like, do you not get an onion hint out of that beer? And I was like, no. And I think we proceeded to have one, or he had some in his cooler, and we had one. And the next time I drank one, I tasted it. Like, I did then, like, because I'm specifically looking for that onion hint. And I was like, oh, my God, you're right. There is an onion hint there. Well, then after that, it was every time I drank one, that's all I tasted. And I didn't want onion in my beer, and I kind of got away from the hop ranch after that.
Cotty must give the swish around the mouth like the wine taster.
Oh, no, he was right. Like, but before he said that, I never got that out of it. It's weird.
Yeah. Like, so it's there. And, yeah, but that's a good beer.
It is a good
beer. And not everybody gets that. Not everybody picks that up. And it's not like I have a sophisticated palate or anything. My taste buds just must pick that up.
Well, mine missed it until you said it.
Yeah.
Good thing you never said anything to me because I missed it.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to know now.
Yeah. And so probably not next podcast, but the one after, I should have our double IPA ready. So we'll drink some of that.
We'll drink some of it, and I'll review it for real.
Yeah. Well, the last beer we made was not the best because we messed up. Remember, we talked about that.
Yeah.
We messed up the hop addition.
No, I thought it tasted great. It was just the way it...
It was bitter on the back end.
There's one thing, but if his beer is amazing, you're not going to get a drink of it.
No, I know. It's the ongoing thing here.
Yeah.
But I'll at least get...
A taste?
Yeah, I'll at least get one. I'll get one bottle anyway, at least to review for the beer review. But
yeah, that's about it. That's all you're getting.
Unless it's horrible.
Let me taste it first, and then I'll...
This is supposed to be the Pliny clone, right?
Yeah, it is.
I can't wait. Yeah. Actually, I can't wait.
It should be good. Should be good. I like Pliny. But we've talked about this. I think it's overrated, but it's good. I don't know. We haven't talked about that on here, though.
Pliny?
Yeah.
I think we did.
That it's overrated?
Yeah, I think we did.
Okay. Well... Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thanks to Matt.
Yep.
For joining us tonight.
And Garrett,
thank you guys
for giving us a update on his season.
And we'll get these guys back. We'll get Matt back on here for sure after rifle season's over here, and
hopefully he kills something here. Yeah. All right. So tonight's podcast is brought to you by Cody and Steve, because Greg's beer ran out. So
yeah, that's true.
So if anybody else wants to send us beer, you're more than welcome to. But for now, it's brought to you by us. And thanks for joining us. Hopefully, next time we talk to you, Matt will have killed a big buck. And
everybody that's still pounding the woods out there, good luck. There's still a lot of tags to be filled, I'm sure, from guys.
Yeah.
We're still in the heart of it for most everybody.
I can't wait till rifle season's over so I can put the trail camera out there. That's what I'm looking for.
Speaking of trail cams, just one last thing. We were worried.
Yep.
I am here to say that I recovered every single trail camera that I put out this year. Yep. That's good.
Congratulations.
High five, right?
Yep. How about it?
You never know, but...
I'm looking forward to putting them out. I mean, I'm ready. I want to see what's making it through the year and everything like that.
Yeah, start shed hunting, and we're getting...
I'm no good at shed hunting.
We're putting the cart way ahead of the horse.
I agree. All right, thanks for joining us, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.